she's a brand new morning since the morning you moved in.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Yes, I'm feeling like a million since I got you living in.
Pieces of a whole with different feelings to evoke, giving distinction to the role, different players, different strokes.
But let me tell you about one thing.
All right, we're we're here, I think. Are we here?
Yep.
Rufus, are you there?
Not all there.
Mart?
I'm trying to be.
Mart's injured.
So. Yes.
But, I mean, you know, you were Lieutenant Colonel retired, a Ranger, airborne, the whole deal. You've been injured before.
Yes, I have.
Did you play football?
Of course I did.
Yeah, well, you got injured.
But he wasn't as clumsy.
Got to shake it off.
He wasn't as clumsy back then.
Got to shake it off, man.
That's right. Just breathe deep.
It hurts to laugh, but
it does.
We laugh on this show.
Yes, you know, we do.
I think it's good for us. It wakes me up during the week when I'm getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I slept in this morning till 5:36, somewhere in there.
Oh, you're a late sleeper.
Oh, gosh, it was so nice. So nice. I always feel so much better. But when I laugh at something, it wakes me up. I don't know. I guess
there have been several,
adrenaline.
Several psychological studies say that laughter is good for your mental health. And
it certainly is.
From common sense.
Yeah.
But something physiological about it, too.
Right.
That it exercises certain organs. And
hormones.
If you find somebody that can't laugh, beware of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody who's never said a funny thing in their life. You gotta
Right. It means they've never had a drink.
Well, I'm not a drinker.
I mean just
once in a while. I did have a brandy in January at the Williamsburg Inn in the bar because it was like 18 degrees outside. So I had a brandy.
And $18.
I probably won't have another brandy for years.
What kind of brandy was it?
It was Napoleon brandy. It was, I forget the name of it.
Oh, that's fancy stuff.
Yeah. It's still it still tasted like kerosene to me. But we tried it. I think Melissa had a little piece of cake or something. I was trying to be a big boy.
So brandy, isn't that distilled wine?
It is souped up wine.
Yeah, it's but it's wine though. It's
made from it's harder.
Fruit. It's fruit.
It's been hardened.
Yeah, hardened up. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to say this too many times, but you talk about a hangover.
Brandy, wine,
a brandy hangover.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think I.
I don't know whether you can say that on this show or not.
I mean, they just...
Well, you just did.
When they give it to you in a little sniffer, they don't put a lot in there anyway. And you don't... It's not something that you chug.
Yeah.
If you're a chugger, which I am not. So, but I just... I did have a little alcohol, but it didn't... I didn't feel like laughing afterwards. I said,
oh, you didn't?
I said, that tasted terrible. Why did I drink that? Why didn't I have a Coca-Cola, as we say in Nash County? 919-860-9783, 919-860-WPTF. There are, you know, I met someone yesterday that didn't like daffodils, and they were digging up the daffodils and giving them away.
My goodness.
The bulbs.
What?
I don't know why.
I had this lady bring in some a jar full of daffodils, and she said it came from Governor Scott's. She dug them up from Governor Scott's home place.
Okay, that's in Alamance County. I've ridden by there many, many, many times.
But they were the most beautiful, almost white color.
Oh my gosh,
they're beautiful.
Yeah,
I've never seen one that light. You know, normally you see like a kind of a orangey or yellowish color around the, I don't even know what you call it, part of the bloom. But these were just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It's almost
that?
White.
Yeah.
Well, I had a question the other day. Paper whites. Now, that's when you go into the store and you put them in a little, not a deep dish, but a 2 or 3 inches deep, and put rock around and put some water in the bottom.
Or sometimes they come like that.
And they come like it already. And the person wanted to know, well, when they're shot, what do you do with them? Well, I stick them in the ground.
Absolutely.
But they don't come back as prolific as they do when you have that first bloom, but stick them right back in the ground.
Yeah, because they're probably used to Florida or something.
Amaryllis are the same way. I mean, people get these beautiful bulbs that are dipped in wax. And I tell people, just take the wax off of it, plant it deep, 8 inches deep. Get it down there. I mean, it needs to go down in the soil, and it'll pop up. I mean, I've got these beautiful amaryllis that are blooming in our wooded area. They come. They're much, much, much later than the ones that you get in the store, because they're usually around Christmas is when they bloom.
Right.
But these amaryllis, I'm talking June, July. We're talking that's when these guys pop up and bloom. But they're beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and they're prolific, and they continue to spread.
Waste not, want not. If you get a gift like that, put it in the ground. Well, if you bought some daffodil bulbs or tulip bulbs late, put them in the ground. Don't throw them away.
But here's another really cool point. I didn't get our, my wife had been gifted some tulips, and I didn't put them in the ground. I didn't get when they need to be planted. And so I took a big pot, and I put some soil in there, and then just stuck them in there, and they're now just popping up. They're about 8 inches, 12 inches tall, and they're beautiful, and they will bloom. It will be like a field of tulips when they do bloom. Mm-hmm. It'll be late.
Yeah.
And then they'll go right in the ground.
Now, Dr. Tom Monaco, who is on our grounds committee at St. Michael's Episcopal, was the head of the horticulture department for many years and is still associated with NC State. He says the shorter versions, the shorter tulips are the ones to plant in this area, that they survive longer, that they will come back more years than the taller ones normally.
Well,
NC State has worked on these. I don't know that there are any varieties that were developed in NC State, but... and they're certainly happier in Michigan and Holland than they are here.
It's been my experience with tulips that I've just quit planting them here, because after 2 or 3 years, they just don't like this hot climate.
No, and they like really – they're another thing that likes good drainage.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind too, but try the shorter ones, and that may help. Brother Herb is with us. We haven't heard from you for a while. Herb, how are you doing today?
Doing absolutely wonderful. It's a great day, and as I always say, old guys just want to wake up in the morning. So it's a good day.
Yeah. Well, we're all here. And speaking of waking up, something I haven't wanted to mention, but daylight saving time is coming up tomorrow.
Oh my God!
Yeah. What are you griping about? I got it. That means I'll get up at 2 o'clock in the morning instead of 3 o'clock. Technically, that's terrible. But Herb, I want to remind you it's daylight saving time. I know you're retired, but
I'm ready.
You got to know. Yeah,
Mike,
sir.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
First, I know this is a garden show, so I'm going to try to throw in a garden question. But first of all, you woke me up when you started talking about laughter. Because it's not just a saying. When you smile, your brain says, okay, release these
endorphins. Right. Thank you. That's it. That was what I was trying to think of.
Not hormones. Endorphins.
And it's good for the body. It's good for the body.
Amen.
So smile. When somebody makes you upset, smile. It'll upset them probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my garden question.
Yes.
Right now, everything is blooming, my red buds and all these other things, but there's one shrub tree that I can't figure out in the neighborhood. It is absolutely gorgeous, covered with blooms that are lavender, and actually, there's another, I saw one that was white, and they look almost like wild honeysuckle blooms, and I have no idea what they are. And I know that's a tough question.
And this is a vine?
No.
Not a vine.
It's a shrub.
Shrub.
And a bush. And it's a lavender color, and the blooms are kind of slenderish, frilly. It's not a grandfather tree.
It's a magnolia. It's a magnolia.
It's a magnolia.
Yes, it is. It's a. It's like a. There's one. There. The purple one's probably a tulip magnolia. They call it. They call it a tulip tree, but it's actually a beautiful, beautiful magnolia.
Yeah, it's different from the tulip poplar.
Yeah,
this is.
And then there's some other magnolias that have a beautiful, almost look like a fringe tree.
Is that the star magnolia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They are deciduous magnolias and
have no leaves right yet.
And yeah, and there are different. There's some that are darker than others. Some lighter pink, some darker
some
pink,
are white,
magenta,
just beautiful white.
White and but then the star magnolia is all white, and there is a huge one in my at a neighbor down the street. Mr. Bennett.
Thank you very much. You'll have a great weekend. And Rufus, before you take your nap, put on your blue so that you can sleep peacefully.
Well, he went to the game last week.
I'm not going to be napping during that time, Herb.
Have a great day, friend.
You too, Herb. Always great hearing from you.
Now, where was Herb a professor?
At Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he didn't want you to put on Duke blue.
No, but that would not be
for your nap. That would you'd be really restless.
That then. Would not be me.
So you went to the game last week. How was that?
It was good.
Yeah. Did you spread the gospel of the weekend, Gardner?
I certainly did.
Okay.
We have the person with whom I went cannot get it in Little Washington, but I did suggest the. Podcast.
Yeah, you can listen to the podcast. You can listen. You should be able to listen to WPTF.com and hear it live.
Right.
Or on your phone or wherever you are. So that's what you need to do for Little Washington. And the podcast that is available.
He says that Tullamore don't do well down there. What is it? Maybe the
salt?
Salt? And
I don't know.
Yeah. I can't imagine any place they don't do well.
Maybe not enough shade. I don't know. They love
well, that's
shade.
True. I don't know. They do need a little shade. They work okay in the sun?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Soil salinity.
If they have a good root system, they can survive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look it up now.
So that's a myth that they need shade. So, like some of the hydrangeas don't need shade.
They do well in shade, but I have some in pure daylight that do very well.
How about that? Okay. Well, they will probably wilt a little bit if you plant them now this summer.
The blooms are not quite as vociferous as they're folding in a little bit and. What happens is you can see those little seeds forming. And, brother, just wait a couple years.
Yeah.
Where you had a handful, you'll have 10 square feet. And a lot of people do not like hellebore because they spread so rapidly and so profusely, and they do. So you just got to learn how to contain, and that's why I'm going to take them out of my so-called... I'm not talking about a regular rock garden like you'd think. I call it a rock garden because it's surrounded by rock fencing. And in that, I've got the peonies and other things like that. And I don't want hellebore in there taking that over.
Right.
You know they're highly toxic, right?
Yes.
Very, very. That's why the deer won't eat them.
Yep.
Do they have arsenic in them, too?
Yeah.
Okay, so
By the way, Joe the Bouncer says he's enjoying the show this morning.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that very much.
And the Mrs. Bouncer, too.
Thank you, Susan. Mrs. Bouncer. I'm sure she appreciates that a lot, Rufus. Hey, by the way, the Wake Forest Farmers Market, because of the rain and the maybe some high winds today, that's been temporarily moved from today till Sunday. I think Sunday's going to be nice, from 1 till 3. So the Wake Forest Farmers Market is expected to be back in its regular schedule next week, next Saturday. But won't have it today, have it tomorrow, 1 till 3.
Didn't we do a show from there one time?
No, that was the Herb Festival. I don't think we did anything.
Up that way we did a show that closed at an odd time to be a fair. Or a market.
Okay. Well, we did do something from somewhere there on White Street other than that warehouse where we did the Herb Festival. It may have been the Herb Festival, I think. But that was still going when we left, so I don't know. I'm not sure. But also, folks at Wild Birds Unlimited in Cary and Raleigh are giving away a beautiful bluebird nesting station. I'm sure you're seeing bluebirds out and about. It's nesting season. And so this bluebird nesting station has a pole and baffle to keep away other critters. So go to WPTF.com, find the contest tab, and register because you might win it. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener on WPTF. John is in Durham. Boy, I'll tell you, we got a lot of fun. That's all we've had are Durham calls this morning. How about that? Hi,
yeah,
John.
Oh,
good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, sir. I have two questions, one on hydrangeas and one on tomatoes. On hydrangea, and I know I've heard the answer through the years, but I'm so old I can't remember what you said yesterday.
That's fine.
On trimming the hydrangea, and I'm noticing new growth coming on some of them now. In trimming the hydrangeas, do I cut the old wood off or now, or do I trim some of the new growth? I'm sorry.
Rufus?
Well, I do this, John. Is it John?
Yeah, yeah.
John.
Yes, yes.
I wait. I've got different kinds of hydrangeas have different pruning times.
Right.
But what I do to make sure... I wait until all the new growth that's going to come somewhere, and if something has not got any greenery on it, cut it to the ground. And that's the only way I do pruning. Am I about right on that, Mart?
Yep. Let it bloom and then cut it down.
Okay. So, actually, bottom line, simply said, just cut, assuming the old wood. Now, new growth doesn't come on old wood. Is that correct?
It depends on the variety.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But if you've got a stalk there, after a couple of weeks from now, it doesn't have any green on it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and cut it down because that means it's dead.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Dead and dying goes first, and diseased, and then after it blooms, then that's when you want to prune a hydrangea.
After the blooms.
Yep. After it blooms.
Prune them down behind the.
You can take it. You can deadhead it, but then shortly thereafter, you can prune it to your height that you're looking for the next year.
Now, is this like a French hydrangea with the big blooms that?
Well, if you got what I call the mophead.
Mophead, yes.
You can control the height of them by pruning. I always go right above a bud, and you can go down to a foot, and they'll grow about 2 feet more, or you can just snip off the old bud and get one that's sometimes three and a half to 4 feet tall. And then if you've got an old fashioned hydrangea, you've got a bush that's way way up there, but you're not talking about that. It's got a trunk.
No, sir.
A trunk
no,
like
sir.
A tree and hydrangea yeah. PG.
Yeah. Okay.
They've got hydrangeas now that bloom all times of year,
that's
Mart,
right.
And
yeah.
I love that. It's sort of like the encore azalea, and working also on other things that bloom not only in the springtime. And I like what's happening that way.
Yeah. But okay. Well, thank you for that. Now my second question regards
We got about a minute before news, John. What would
okay,
you...
the bottom rot. What can I do? Can I apply anything now in preparation to keep having what we always call bottom rot?
That's root rot.
You mean on tomatoes?
Yes, sir.
Blossom end rot?
Not at the stem, but not at the stem, but at the bottom of the tomato.
Oh, that's the calcium deficiency.
Yeah, blossom end rot.
Blossom end rot.
There are lime. I mean, technically, I think if you know where you're going to plant for the next year, right after you get rid of the old plants, you put in, get a soil test, you put in probably a lot of lime. But otherwise, there are blossom end rot preventers that you can buy at the store.
Just pour lime into the soil.
Yeah, it's essentially lime calcium. Yeah. We got to go for news, John, but you're welcome to hang on or we'll go.
No, I'm good, but thank you for your info.
Thank you. You know, Rufus, you don't need to dance every time we have that. It was the Fabulous Shakers.
Oh, man.
It's a little beach music theme this morning. You don't need to dance every time.
But it was fun.
I know. We need somebody in here for you to shag with.
Yeah. that might be.
Mark's way too big for shagging.
Well, Jason.
That might be my assistant, Cheryl. Cause
Cheryl?
She hangs out with Big John.
Yeah, well, she
and
knows
they go
how
to
shag,
a lot of beach music festivals. Well, and she's a shagger.
Next time we have a beach music theme, we'll have to ask Cheryl to come up here.
Oh, yeah. That's what they call Cheryl up in the mountains.
Cheryl.
Cheryl.
Cheryl. Cheryl.
Yeah.
Cheryl. Nash County. Nash County, too.
Oh. Speaking of that.
Cheryl put up a big cannon this year.
Good for her.
It's sort of like one time in when my brother David was the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, in other words, a moonshine revenuer, in Wilkes County. At that time, Junior Johnson was wide open. And I would thumb up on Friday nights from Chapel Hill and go on my brother David on raids. And one night they raided Ms. Junior Johnson's mother's home.
Yeah.
And they found over 50 100-pound sacks of sugar in the basement. And I recall my brother David saying, "Well, Miss Johnson, what are you doing with all that sugar?" She said, "I'm putting up a big canning this year."
And it's and what's so ironic is that Rufus became very good friends with Junior Johnson. And
yeah,
you actually handled some legal work for him over the years.
Yeah, I was his lawyer.
Went up to that mansion on the hill and
yeah, they finally sold that.
Yeah,
Junior moved to Charlotte.
That wasn't actually in Wilkes County, was it?
No,
Yadkin
it was
County.
Roaring Gap in Yadkin County.
Yeah, yeah, it's just past 77.
Not Roaring Gap, Roaring River.
You can still see it up there. So yeah. I don't know how many acres he had, but that was a beautiful mansion.
But
up there.
He spent more time down there in his little shack.
Yeah.
Where he had
he cooked breakfast.
Cooked breakfast down there all the time.
That's right.
Is that what they called it?
Well, yeah. That's what they called it.
But if you're driving on 421 and toward Boone and you go across 77 and I don't know, it's 2 or 3, 4 miles, look on your right and you'll see a beautiful, you'll see pillars and a gate, iron gate, but you'll also see an expanse of manicured land and then this huge, I don't know how many, 15,000 square feet, something like that, brick Georgian mansion up on the hill. That was Rufus. I mean, Rufus wishes it was his, but it was actually Junior's.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so many people, are you up, are you eating nabs?
I'm opening up a nab.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, I'm just wondering. Well, let me do this commercial. Marilyn and I Musgard, we've talked about pests this morning, and like so many of you, when the weather starts warming up, I Musgard, and it's just time to put it out. Hungry deer, rabbits visit the gardens looking to eat tender new growth. Wouldn't it be nice to see your garden flourishing free with nibbling leaves? No nibbling leaves, no trampled flowers. That'd be better. With IMOS Garden deer and rabbit repellents, you can make that dream reality. IMOS Garden repellents are made from natural ingredients, ensuring a safe and eco-friendly solution for your plants, the environment, and you. The repellents are gentle on your garden, but tough on deer and rabbits, sending them anywhere else to eat. IMOS Garden repellents are long-lasting, and, you know, no more of this constant reapplying either after every rainfall or watering. IMOS Garden provides protection that stands the test of time so you can spend more time enjoying your garden and less time worrying about critter invasions. IMOS Garden repellents are available at local garden centers like Logan Trading Company, Raleigh, the Triangle Ace, hardware stores that are around. In Durham, for instance, protect your garden today with IMOS Garden repellents, people, pet, and eco-friendly. IMOS Garden, your ultimate defense against garden pests. We've already had testimonials this morning. Now, Rufus, you can go ahead and open up your nabs now. Carter Q, we have a literary figure.
Two, while you were doing that wonderful commercial. And by the way, I had a squirrel problem. I think I've mentioned this before on the radio.
Yeah.
Of eating my tomatoes. And
would take a little bite out of it.
A little bite and just ruin it. And IMOS Garden worked. I just spread it around in the bottom in a pot. You said a while ago that nobody much puts a tomato in the ground anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I spread it around the edge of the big pot, and it stopped them.
I'll tell you, that's really something. We have a literary figure, Carter Q from Durham. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Mike, Mark, and Rufus, good morning to you.
All right. Everything's all right. We finally have, I see Stephen Garner. That's the first call we've had this morning that wasn't from Durham. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, Carter, I appreciate seeing the symposium you sent me and Mike.
I know. I always enjoy emails from you, Carter.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, we are looking forward to the symposium, the African American Legacy in Gardening and Horticulture, which will take place at Hayti Heritage Center, March 30th, 2024, and it's a collaborative partnership between Durham County Library and the Moorhead Manor and Seraphy Duke Gardens and North Carolina Botanical Garden, and also Triangle Gardener Magazine. And a lot of other fine folk, North Carolina NT State University. So we are essentially pooling our resources and talents to explore this. We're going to have three symposiums. We're going to have two symposiums, and we will have one keynote address by horticulturalist, garden historian Abra Lee, and the early plenary sessions, we're going to have people like Justin Robinson, who was with the Carolina Chocolate Drops, Zelda Lockhart, Leonita Inge, Noel Morissette, who wrote a very interesting history on Ann Spencer, who was a Harlem Renaissance artist, writer, but also a very fine gardener. And the Spencer Gardens are still in existence in Lynchburg, Virginia, and her granddaughter, Sean Spencer, will be with us. We're going to have a lot of interesting people who will be coming to Durham on that particular day. And if any listeners would like to sign up for the symposium, and it's free, and we're going to have lunch, food trucks, et cetera, provide lunch. But it's just a matter of going to the Duke Gardens website and also the North Carolina Botanical Garden on their, under their adult education site. You can register from there. But, yeah, we're really looking forward to it. A lot of interesting untold stories that, you know, many gardeners and horticulture historians are unaware of, I think.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Is this going to be an annual thing, maybe?
Well, we'll see. As I told I was talking with my colleagues over at the over at Sarah B. Duke, and I said, well, I said, let's get past this.
I'm sure it's a lot to the planning and coordinating all those people, but that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And so the physical, the Hetai House, you say?
Hetai Cultural Center.
Yeah, Hetai Heritage Center.
Heritage Center.
804 Fayetteville Street here in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even though it's not necessary for people to register, but you know, we just ask people to pre-register so we can kind of keep up with the numbers. But you know, of course, you know, people are more than welcome. You know, people can walk up, and they don't have to stay for the entire symposium. You know, they can kind of pick and choose which plenary sessions they'd like to attend, and some people, you know, may stay for all three. You know, so.
That's great. I'm so glad you let us know about that, and I hope lots of our listeners will turn up.
Yes. But my question was, you know, I'm not a weekend warrior grass guy, and but my question was, is there a natural way to eliminate perennial rye in a Bermuda lawn as opposed to using a toxic herbicide like MSM?
Well, there are products that will get rid of fescue and rye in Bermuda. I can't. Turflon ester is the product that comes to mind. I've never used it. I hear that it's very expensive. I'm sure there are some others.
Is that Marta, organic? Is that organic? I think just said that your organic practices.
Oh, I don't know that there is an organic way except a strong back.
Yeah, to rogue it out.
And a shovel.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only organic way. And, you know, making sure that you have Bermuda planted where it's happy and that you are following directions to the right fertilization times, but it's got to have at least 8 hours. Bermuda has to have 8 hours of sunlight, and then if it's happy, it's not going to be have any competition.
But the issue, you said annual rye, correct?
No, I overseeded with perennial rye.
Oh.
This winter, and while the neighbors and everybody, you know, congratulated me and this type of thing, I know it's going to be pretty difficult.
Well, you know, when it gets May, that should go away, and yeah. I don't know whether does it really perennialize that rye.
Well, that's a good question because, you know, normal ryegrass would tiller basically it spreads by just moving bigger and bigger and bigger, making itself bigger
clumps.
Yeah, clumping. But if you just don't let it go to seed, that's number one.
It's a great idea. Okay. Don't let it go to seed, Carter.
And then, secondly, you could go out and in the summer, it just doesn't tolerate heat.
Okay.
So it should kind of die back. And so if you just keep it mowed really close.
Bermuda
will take the mowing.
Right. That's another thing. That's part of making that Bermuda happy is cutting it at the correct height, which is not very much. And whereas rye prefers, you know, 3 inches.
Yeah, and you'll burn it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the heat, our heat in May, at least by May, and also cutting it close, you know, doing all the things you're supposed to do for Bermuda and not paying attention to the ryegrass should do it.
Okay, so just go ahead and just scalp it and keep
not scalp it.
Well, you'd be scalping the rye, but don't scalp
the Bermuda.
Yeah. It's hard to scalp Bermuda. I mean,
Bermuda
because it's very, very low. It prefers, you know, an inch.
Well, Carter, it sounds to me like you got it pretty long with that rye in there. I love rye grass.
Yeah, some people overseed because they like the green. That's why a lot of people plant
on
fescue
the farm,
anyway.
We would overseed rye grass on the farm to put the nutrients in there, Mark.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and you know, frankly, using it as a compost is to turn it in or to terminate it. Mm-hmm. Provides that organic matter to the soil.
Yeah.
Well, Carter, are your neighbors fussing?
Oh no, they
like it.
Look, Look, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I've had people come up to me, and they want to know.
Rye is a real miracle until about May.
Lovely grass.
And then it just...
Yeah,
it just dies. It just starts dying, and okay. even the perennial rye should do that too.
I never knew there was anything called perennial rye.
Oh,
well, I think it perennializes more to the north of us in you know cooler zones than we have here, and so we're in eight.
Yeah.
I guess we're in 8A now.
Eight. Yeah, that's right.
So I mean, the rye is going to have even less chance.
Okay, well, that's great.
Call us back and let us know in June if it's gone.
Well, yeah, Carter, yeah. I've always wondered, other than you've explained now your lawn, what are your other plants? What's your favorite shrub? I've never asked you.
Oh, you know what? Now, that's like, I guess that's like some grandparent being asked, what is their favorite grandchild? I guess ask Mike what's his favorite grandchild, so I don't know.
Oh, I can't do that.
Yeah,
and I only have two to choose from. It's still wouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I just have an extensive wish list, of course, and I'm looking at certain things, and so I don't know if I have a favorite. I have a list of things that I've been fantasizing about, but. So,
I hope you mean it in the garden area.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to. Can you name one?
Oh, yeah. You know, well, right now, I'm actually looking at, I really like the variegated abelias. And Yeah, I've really been looking at some very interesting variegated abelias and, you know, and I really love camellias, but I don't have an actual place for them. That I do have a place possibly. So I've been looking at some different camellias, and the other thing that I just did, I dug up. I had grown some maples, some October glories. As little saplings, and they've gotten to be pretty large, and I've had to move them from the side of the house, and so I'm gonna be putting the burlap in the ball and passing them on to some neighbors if they'll take them.
Does that have the orangey red foliage in the fall?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's a really good name variety.
Yeah, you know, and so I had some on the side in the side yard, but I think that they really are, you know, a little bit too close to where the air conditioning units and some other things. And so
they can get pretty big.
Yeah. So I'm actually moving those, but I put them there because I was experimenting with see how large these saplings would go. I mean, they start out as little sprigs, but now they're about 8 feet, 9 feet tall now.
Oh man!
And
well, you're going to have some shade before you know it.
I know, exactly. Well, and I took them out yesterday.
Why would you burlap them? Looks like you get enough root and soil.
I'm going to be moving them. I'm giving them away.
Guess he doesn't have a pot big enough for the root system.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I've actually gone in there and cut and trimmed some of the. I've cut the a root prune that both of them starting maybe about. A month ago, and so I finally just pulled them out, and so now I'm actually looking to move Osmanthus fragrans, and looking to move the this Tindo viburnum that I had purchased and put in the wrong place, but I'm doing some moving gigs now, so. Yeah.
Well, everybody does that.
Or you're doing it now before you have to have a backhoe come do it.
Yeah.
like some of the rest of them.
That's right.
I know. But you know what? And I don't know. I don't know if it's ego or a cheapness, but I've already just grabbed my wheelbarrow and do what I've always done. So, but I imagine that I probably better stop doing some of this. But I've been doing it the hard way.
I will tell you that I'm very proud to hear you just say root pruning.
Mm-hmm.
absolutely a month ago to have,
before you move something.
Yeah, before you move it. I mean, most people don't even know what that is. And it really, really helps a plant before you move it to do some pruning of the root system and let it get reestablished so you're not killing it as you move it, because it really stresses those plants whenever you try to move them if you haven't done that. It makes the roots really fibrous. And when you do a root pruning, anytime you prune, it stimulates growth. And so by stimulating that growth in the roots, it puts out a lot more fibrous roots, and they're able to help it reestablish and much quicker whenever you move it.
And makes it easier to dig, too, because you're already done that one time.
Yep.
Well, Carter, we had always nice talking to you. Please call us again.
Well, yeah, I will. Oh, last thing, maybe Mark can answer this, but the Chindo Viburnum and the Osmanthus fragrans that I moved, they actually, I had burned them up because I knew that I might eventually end up having to move them, and they were actually fairly young. So they really are only like 2 years old. I mean, but they might be about maybe 5 feet. And so I don't think I'll have too much transplant shock moving those.
Right. Okay. So
is that a fair assessment?
As long as if you've done everything that I heard you say you're doing, I think you'll have a great move. But don't be afraid to prune them a little bit, the tops. Whenever you put them down, you put the roots back in the ground, because that will also it reduces some of the stress from the top by pruning it down some. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that is exactly what I did. So,
but 5 feet is pretty big.
yeah.
Okay, very good. Good luck with it.
Thank you, Carter.
All right. Okay.
Good luck with the event.
Okay, thank you very much.
And don't break your back, because that's a big plant.
That's right. It sure is. Okay, it's my to help you.
All right. Oh, yeah. I think I will.
All right.
Thanks for that advice. Words of wisdom on a Saturday morning.
There you go. See you later. That's Carter Q from the library in Durham.
Yeah.
You know, every time you buy a bag of black cow, you're helping the environment. Bet you didn't know that, but you really are. Helping the environment with all of that you plant with black cow, because you see the process that they use there helps to repurpose manure. So it's environmentally friendly and beneficial for your garden. And black cow contains up to 10 times more nutrients and microbes than garden soils. And it really helps retain moisture too. So we've had some dry spells lately. Your lawn, flower beds, vegetable gardens will all come off to a great start with black cow. Everything grows better with sun, water, and black cow. For more details, check out their wonderful website, blackcow.com. And remember, cow is spelled with a K. All right. Steve is in Garner. Steve, we only have about a minute and a half before news.
I'll call back after Monica.
All right. That's fine. Yeah, Monica's coming up after the 10 o'clock news. That'll be fine. We'll do that.
I'll just call back after Monica.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right.
You're listening to The Weekend Gardener here on WPTF. More coming up.